have no relationship to disclose. All right, so today I want to talk to you guys about young African-American women, and I have that in quotes because they really are a very interesting group, and that's because they belong to three groups that really impact their risk of STIs and HIV. So they have intersecting risk, and that's based on their age, their ethnicity, and also their gender. And so these risks intersect, like I said, to place them at increased risk of HIV and STIs, and that's through these various risk factors that are socioeconomical, behavioral, and biological. So if you think about African Americans as an ethnic group, they disproportionately belong to those living at or below the poverty line. So they have decreased or diminished access to resources, and that includes healthcare resources, so access to healthcare, access to health insurance, ability to pay. And then when you think about young people, for example, first of all, they just make more risky decisions in general. But also, if you think about the healthcare system, it's really catered towards adults. So health information is written in a way sometimes that uses terminologies that young people don't really understand. So issues of health literacy, and then also confidentiality. So if I go to the doctor, will my mom know? Will my dad get the claim receipt? Those things place young black women at risk also. And then there's biological risk. So just by being a woman, you're anatomically more susceptible to HIV and STIs. And you also have an anatomy that's a little more complicated, and you might confuse symptoms with regular discharge, and you might not be able to see certain symptoms because they're internal. This places you at increased risk of complications due to STIs and also HIV if you are exposed. So these risks come together, and it's really like tri-acting on this this population. And that's really reflected in here in the statistics. So over on the left, we have gonorrhea and chlamydia. And as you see, if you look at the groups 15 to 24, ages 15 to 24, in comparison to other age groups, they're really affected more than other age groups. And if you look within those groups even and compare women to men, young women are affected more than men, or young men are. And then over on the right, we have new HIV infections. And if you compare groups by or within race or within ethnic group, so if you look at African-American women in comparison to African-American men, they're disproportionately affected. If you then look at African-American women within their own gender group and compare them to white women and Hispanic women, they're disproportionately affected. So you see the characteristics I talked about before, they're really reflected in the statistics. All right, and then behavior also has an impact. So African-American women are at increased risk due to these behaviors: drug and alcohol use, early sexual initiation, also unprotected sexual intercourse, having multiple sex partners, and that's lifetime and concurrent, and then accepting risky partners. So risky partners might be a man who has sex with other men, a man who has other female sexual partners, a previously incarcerated man, and also an injection drug user. And various factors affect whether or not young black women adopt these behaviors. So psychosocial factors such as knowledge. Do I have HIV information? Do I have HIV prevention information? Perceived risk. So how at risk am I of getting an STI? And also, how at risk is my partner? And then sociocultural factors such as cultural norms might affect early sexual initiation. And lastly, relationship dynamics. So do I have power within my relationship to request or demand a condom from my partner? And then the last psychosocial factor, and what I'm here to talk about today, is the media. So one might ask, why hip-hop? Like, why are you looking at hip-hop? There's so much media to look at. But if you look at African-American musical genres, they're of interest because they really have had a long history of representations of African-American women's sexuality. And the issue with this is that the sexuality, or the representations rather, have been one-dimensional. So if you look at movies, videos, things like that, movies that are videos, not music videos, you have a more multi-dimensional representation of women versus in music. So in music, there's this one salient theme of like what African-American women act like. And this is what we found. So if you look at previous research, content analyses before have always shown women to be hypersexual, to be materialistic. So you have that gold digger theme. Amoral. There's an overemphasis on sexual appearance, so body parts, the way they're dressed, the way they're acting. And then also they're placed as decorative objects in the videos rather than active agents. So I found this quote to be really relevant. Much of this music is produced by a black culture industry in which African-American artists have little to say in production. So what does that mean? That basically means that we can't blame the artists alone. The music industry is an industry, so it's designed to bring in revenue. So we have to ask, like, what are these artists going to do? This is how they make their career. This is how they make money. They have to do this. We can't just blame it on them alone. And then this is just a not-so-fun fact that kind of reflects that. And that's between Dr. Dre's 1992 album, which was The Chronic, and was the beginning of gangsta rap, in which representations of women just declined. But between that and 2006, there were only two adult solo male artists to achieve platinum-level sales without referring to women as bitches or hoes. And there will be some language in here, obviously, so. All right, so, again, these images and these lyrics, they sell. So sex sells. They have to use these images, basically, to go on in the industry. And what happens is, as it's used more and more in the media, it becomes a bigger part of popular culture. And as it's a bigger part of popular culture, it's used more and more in the media. So this is really an iterative process. It's cyclical. It really feeds into itself. And what happens is the more it's used and the more it becomes a part of popular culture, it becomes this mainstream way of thinking. And so before examining that, you might want to ask, like, where do these come from? And so when you think about the stereotypes that we have about black women, one big one is the mammy. Everyone's heard of the mammy stereotype, like Aunt Jemima. And so that's an example of how these are really historically rooted. They come from history. They've been around for a long time. And so you have other ones, the sapphire, the welfare mother, and also the Jezebel, and that's the one that we're really going to go with today. The Jezebel is an over-sexualized woman. She craves sex. She wants sex so much. She'll trade anything for sex and without commitment. And that's really transformed over time to be like the freak, the hoochie of the early 90s rap, and the hoe today. And again, people who aren't African-American women really use this image or this representation to understand how African-American acts, how to be treated, or how they should be treated, who they are. And then young black girls use this as a model and to really model their own behavior after, and also use it to monitor their own behavior, so as a standard to live up to. And previous research has indeed found that young African-American women with greater exposure to hip-hop media have increased acceptance of teen dating violence, greater drug and alcohol use, they're more likely to engage in sexual concurrency, and also test positive for an STI. They also hold more permissive and stereotypical sexual attitudes. So those would be attitudes that accept and promote gender norms, gender inequality, a very hegemonic masculinity. And these findings considered, there were some methodological issues with previous research, and that's basically been that it's only examined hip-hop videos, and so that's excluding two things. It's excluding R&B, which has, since hip-hop has been developing, we'll say, R&B has really followed in the same line. So it's been more inclusive of hip-hop artists, more inclusive of hip-hop features, and if you watch the videos and listen to the lyrics, a lot of the themes are the same within the hip R&B songs. And then another thing is it really excludes the importance of lyrics alone. So without even looking at a video, what type of narrative is given in the lyrics of a song? So our current research wanted to kind of explore that and take into account not only hip-hop videos, but also the lyrics in the songs, and not only hip-hop, but also R&B. So it's kind of looking at two other aspects of hip-hop culture. And our question was, how are black women represented in this media? All right, so we examined songs identified by Billboard's top 10 charts, and we used the week of February 16, 2013. That was the most recent week at the time of the research. And of course, these trends are constantly in flux, so they're always changing. And so we want to use the most recent research, rather than most recent data. And we continue to work with these also because they presented a very like rare but unique opportunity to look at a list of songs that was produced or performed by a very diverse group of artists with respect to race and gender. And you'll see that in a second. And so we open-coded these the songs for phrases relating to representations of African-American women and also risky sexual behaviors, and then did the videos the same way, but looking for imagery and scenarios. And a song was to be excluded if it had no representations of women in it or no risky sexual behaviors. But of course, none were excluded. So we looked at 10 songs in the end, and six were hip hop, four were R&B, and three were produced by or released by two different female artists. One was on the chart twice, and then the other seven were by male artists. Okay, and from that analysis, we came up with four interrelated themes. So the first thing was objectification of women through negative identification and emphasis on body parts. So again, some language. But the words bitch and hoe were used 46 and 8 times respectively within 7 songs. So almost all of the songs reference women in a derogatory manner. And then girl. So we might not think of girl as offensive or as derogatory as the other words, but it doesn't really represent women as mature and capable emotional beings. So we included that. And in the videos, women were represented in a way that really emphasized their body. A lot of times, the camera like came in close to body parts and or lighting was diverted away from their face, as you see here in the top right. Posing sexually, sometimes right, crotch shot, like, in for the money. So, and then the bottom left, where you have someone, or where you have the camera, rather, panning in close on the young lady's face, and the lyric here was, she likes my licorice, I let her lick it. So a lot of phallic suggestion and still a lot of sexualization. And then the second theme was eroticization of women via references of sexual acts and sexuality. So women were referenced almost exclusively to convey sexual prowess and conquest among men. And lyrics videos rather personified that. So as you see here in the top lyric, a man had the choice to be with who he wanted to be with, and the power even to change a woman's sexuality. And in the third lyric, the choice and the power to be with more than one woman at a time, rather. And as you see here, like, the man has to do nothing and three women with him. And something that we found that was interesting was that the women didn't really portray themselves any differently when they were the artists themselves. So the bottom left image is a still from a female artist video in which she acted just as the models did in the male artist videos. And if you notice the title, so may not have thought it was contemporary because Oh Baby Like It Raw is also an older song, but used again here. And again, there were no references of safe sex. So on the other hand, a woman right here was celebrated for liking raw or unprotected sex, so kind of the contrary to what we would want in a music video. And then the third theme, negative depictions of interpersonal relationships and violent depictions of sex. So love was never mentioned in an emotional way. Rather, it was always used kind of as a word to describe lust. And let's see. Oh, even the depictions in the videos, like, there were no positive depictions of relationships. In fact, there were really no depictions at all. There was only one reference to a monogamous relationship in all of the lyrics, and that was one reference to marriage. And then among the videos, there was only one kind of scenario or storyline that talked about a monogamous relationship. But even that relationship was seen to be tumultuous. And the video was really about how a black woman has to balance her family without the support of a man, essentially, even when he's in-house. And then violent depictions of sex. So we saw that there were very violent words used to describe sex. So as you see in the first lyric, I beat, I hit. Words like that or phrases like that were used to describe sex. And sex is always demanded of a woman rather than it being kind of like a two-part process or a two-person process, like a decision between two partners. As you see here in the second lyric, give it to me now, demanded of a woman. And as far as violent imagery, I have a question mark there because there was none. As far as the videos, you didn't see any violent imagery throughout the videos. And I think that's because we really have, like, rights groups protesting, if you saw it in a video. But the issue is that we don't have that same support when we're talking about lyrics only. And then the last theme, this is really theme four, is drug and alcohol use and abuse. So as you see here, drugs and alcohol were used a lot or depicted a lot throughout the music videos. They were talked about in a way that drugs or alcohol could be used to attract women. So one lyric said, I wave a few bottles and I watch them all flock. I show them the liquor, essentially, and they come to me. And also, it was used as a way to loosen women up so that they would perform sexual acts. And that's a thing that we don't only see in hip-hop. We also see it in other forms of media. Okay, and then also of interest. So we found a few other things that weren't necessarily related directly to our research question, but there was increased inclusion of a diverse group of women in these videos. So whereas before you might only see African-American women in hip-hop and R&B videos, we see a lot of Latina women in these hip-hop and R&B videos these days, and that has implications that I'll talk about in a few slides. And then the representations put forward by Black women were sometimes just as harsh as those put forward by the men that were listed on the top 10 list. However, they were a lot more varied. So whereas you had one theme that was threaded throughout all of the songs or videos produced or released by men, when you looked at the ones produced or released by women, it kind of was a more varied representation of women within those videos. And this is important because if you think about a female artist, women might be more likely, or young Black women might be more likely to identify with that young woman. So it's really important to look at how Black women are portraying themselves in these videos. And then for the R&B songs and videos, they featured more varied representations as well. However, when there wasn't a rap verse on it or a hip-hop verse on it or a hip-hop artist featured on the song, that's when you have like the more harsh representations within that song. And that's exactly why we need to be looking at these R&B songs and videos as well, as far as trying to figure out how Black women are represented there. Also, that's important because R&B songs and videos might be seen as more innocuous to young women, so they might seem more harmless, and the messages might be able to more easily get through to the young women without them putting up any counter arguments or defenses. Okay, so in summary, drugs, alcohol, and risky sex are promoted in both hip-hop and R&B videos and lyrics. And both hip-hop and R&B portray African-American women as sexual objects. However, the lyrics and the videos supplement each other, so they're both important. So you might have an instance in which there are no references to a woman in a song, or maybe one. We had one on the list that literally mentioned women one time. However, wherever the male artist was throughout the video, he always had two women on his arm. So the video was important to look at and supplement to that song in that example. However, on the flip side, you might have videos that have no violence in them at all. But when you listen to the songs related to that video, again, we have very violent depictions of sex. So it's really important to look at these kind of like as pieces of a puzzle that fit together, just like we would look at hip-hop as pieces of the larger media puzzle that we look at. And then the implication. So again, the behavior of impressionable young African American women may be directly influenced by media representation. So researchers should keep this in mind, rather, and really focus on doing more content analyses. Again, this is the media, so it's constantly in flux, it's constantly changing. The trends are changing, the themes are sometimes changing. So we can't keep using interventions and communication that is based on old research. We need to keep it going. And then also we need to explore the impact on other women. So as we've only done really media literacy interventions on young Black women with respect to hip-hop and R&B, with the inclusion of a diverse group of women in the videos now, it's really important to kind of expand the reach of our communication, especially considering the reach of hip-hop. So you see things like twerking now. Twerking is on daytime television. It's on nighttime shows. It's on everywhere you look now, really. And it was really popularized by hip-hop. So if we can see the reach of that and how it's affected so many young people, then we really understand that we need to expand the reach of our communication interventions also. And more research on the actual relationship. So understanding the relationship. We can't tell young Black women, don't watch this stuff. They're going to watch it. So we need to really understand like what types of things mediate and moderate the relationship between exposure to media, exposure to hip-hop, and adoption of risky behaviors. Self-esteem, empowerment, literacy, all these things might be of importance. And then messaging and programming. So that should give African-American women the tools necessary to combat these images. But also just as important is the timing, because peak media exposure for youth is about 11 to 14. So we want to make sure that we're giving them the tools necessary before and concurrently while they're receiving the negative messages from the media. These are my references. and I'll take questions after.
I think since we have plenty of time, why don't we do maybe 5 minutes of questions now, and then if, yeah, if there are additional ones, we can do that as well.
Okay, questions or comments? Yes. I don't think they're having less sex because of the videos. I think that maybe they have less risky sexual networks. I don't think that necessarily the videos are impacting them less, but I think that at the younger ages where adolescent development and the mind is still forming and young women are still, like, really forming opinions and identities, that's when it's the most important, and that's when hip-hop is, like, the most important, or media in general is the most important to them, so that's when we should be targeting them. I think that 25 to 29 is still important, and they're still at risk, obviously, but I don't think that the media is as much a factor at that age, if that makes sense. Does that answer your question? No, I think that the exposure is still there. I just don't think that it's correlated as much to outcomes at that age. Yeah. So they seem to be young women, not adolescent. I'm sure that there's some type of age limit as far as. I'm sure that, I mean, as you see here, they seem to be young women. I can't tell their ages from how they seem in the video, but I don't think necessarily that the age matters as much in modeling. Like, I think it's the identification with the fact that they're women and they're black women at that. And also, when you think of, and this, what I'm saying right now is my opinion, but when you think about young women and who they're looking up to, who they're looking towards, kind of, it's less often, I think when we're talking about growing up, you're going to look up, you're going to look at people older than you and use those as models, if that makes sense. Yeah. Yes. Yes, I actually love that idea, especially my research interests are concurrency, and so I'm really interested in how relationships are depicted in the media period, but especially among black women in these reality shows, because often we see there's some type of love triangle in there in which the woman knows that there's another woman and then there's also a man. So I think that that would be a very interesting place to go next. Again, I think reality television is fairly new, and especially black people in reality television. So I think right now, as far as examining young women's sexualities, I think it's really important to get this understood first and then move on to other media sources.
You mentioned in one of the earlier slides the background information about how these portrayals of women affect women and young women.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm not looking at that specifically. I do most of my research, whether it be qualitative or quantitative, with young women. But I think it's very interesting, and I don't know if I touched on that when talking about this point, is that people who aren't young black women kind of use this in a way to understand how black women are. So they use it to really, as like a point of common sense of this is just how it is. They essentialize. And so I think that what's happening likely is that young black men are being socialized to like understand that this is how it's okay to treat black women. And I'm even seeing that in my dissertation. So I'm collecting data about, again, partner concurrency. And when I ask young women, oh, well, why do you think that it's okay, or that young men think it's okay to have more than one partner? Oh, it's just like that. Like, they just raised like that. They know that they can get away with it. So black women also know that the men are being socialized. It's kind of like a circle, and they kind of feed into each other. Yes.
So on one of your first slides, you said that you referenced 1992 for Dr. Gray's album coming out. Did anybody do this type of research back then to look at, you know, what happened?
I don't think there's been any, like, longitudinal, if that's what you mean. I don't think so. I think that a lot of the research that I mentioned here was cross-sectional. It wasn't longitudinal. It didn't take place over time. They really just looked at correlations.
And, I guess, somewhat related, if you went back and pulled, like, 10 songs from 1992, mm-hmm. do you think the themes would be exactly the same?
Okay, so I actually, when I first started this project, I was actually looking at that. I was comparing, but it just got way too big. I was comparing kind of what was popular then versus what was popular now. And I think a lot of the themes were more, how can I say this? Like, it wasn't as explicit, in my opinion. And even if you look at, in my opinion, videos from the 90s, to now, I think that the videos are better now, but the lyrics are worse. So if anyone remembers the big fiasco about the tip drill video, where Nelly slid a credit card between the buttocks of a woman in a video, and this was like for an uncut. It was basically likened to soft porn. And this is a music video, though. We don't see stuff like that anymore, and that's because rights groups, women's rights groups, have really protested that. But as far as the lyrics, I think that they've gotten worse. Yes.
If you could change, which one would you change? Would you change the lyrics or would you change the video?
That's a good question. I don't know if I've even asked myself that. The reason why I explored lyrics in the first place is because I really feel like the reach is reaching more people. So if you think about accessing a video, a young woman would need like a TV, some type of device, a smart device, a computer or something like that. And to hear the lyrics in a song, all they need is a radio. And so an example of that is like when I was younger in elementary school, I would ride the bus to school and our bus driver would play this type of music for us. So even if the parents aren't letting them, they can still access it and for free. So I think that because they can access it more easily, I would lean towards lyrics, especially because, like I said, I feel like the lyrics are worse. So, yes.
When you mentioned the reach, uh-huh. I think the boundaries have changed because when I was growing up, there was a radio version of a song and
mm-hmm.
a version of a song,
mm-hmm.
and those versions could be completely different.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're beeping the wrong things. I heard a song that beeped condoms out before, and I'm just like, what? But, yeah, I agree with that.